Welcome to the Angry Admins Podcast for May 21st, 2007, episode 28.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Angry Admins Podcast. My name is Ryan Necessary.
And I'm Joe Bibby.
We're coming to you live from Houston, Texas. Actually, we're not coming to you live.
We're coming to you live to tape. Wait, live to hard drive.
Yeah. All I know is we're coming to you on the worst day of the week. Monday. Anyways, some news this week. Let's go ahead and get into it. Joe, you go first.
Okay. Big story this week. The Optimus Maximus has gone to pre-order.
The Roman keyboard.
So this is that OLED keyboard where each key has its own screen.
And shows.
You can change what it shows. So your keyboard is no longer static.
Okay.
And then, you know, it's a pretty good deal. $1,500 for a keyboard.
Oh my God.
That's more than...
That's...
I could get a MacBook for that.
Yeah.
So...
I don't know.
People are ordering them, though. I mean, so here's the thing. It's a cool idea. People like the idea of having it so... I don't know if you remember these. You had like the gamer keyboards with the different layouts you could lay on top of them.
Yeah.
I mean, imagine that, but dynamic all the time for gaming, where like AWSD turns into up, down, left, right, and like, you know, strafing and that kind of stuff. So each key you can just look and you see what the key is.
Yeah, I see that. I get the concept.
I would only spend maybe an extra $10 for that feature. Personally.
Well, I'd probably pay $200 for it.
So
$100 being a normal, man, like awesome keyboard.
I can't imagine. I mean, after about 10 seconds in a game, I'm not looking at the keyboard anymore.
Yeah.
So you're paying $200 for 10 seconds.
I would want it to always be doing something.
Yeah.
If I have focus on my browser, I would want it to do browser stuff. If I'm editing video, it needs to be showing me video editing.
Right. You know. I guess for video editing and some of the more, definitely not for gaming, but... Yeah, I guess for video editing or that kind of thing, I could see it being useful.
But it would have to be smart enough to know.
Yeah.
All the time. Yeah.
And it could if it's USB. I mean, you can send data back and forth. But I don't know. Either way, $1,500 is way too much money.
Yeah, that's just ridiculous.
But maybe the price will come down, you know. And originally, they were only going to release just like a small 6 or 8 button side keyboard thing that you could get.
Right.
And then people wanted the full keyboard, so they finally made it. The other rumor I heard is that because of the nature of OLED currently, that these keys will only last about a year, and then the displays will start going out.
Yeah.
For average use, anyway.
I guess it's the Logitech keyboard. There's one that's for gamers that has like the little,
yeah, it has a little
LCD
status,
screen, and right, you can program all your macros and stuff into it. Mm-hmm. I think they have it right, because it's not that much more than a quality keyboard.
Yeah.
You can program it to do whatever you want for any application, and it doesn't cost as much as a computer.
But I guess, you know, there's always the first thing that comes out that's ridiculously expensive that 5 or 6 people buy that starts driving the price down. I don't know. So we had some other news this week. What was that?
So Apple announced new MacBooks. Yay. Too bad they still didn't announce the missing computer in their lineup.
The fabled desktop for home users that everyone would buy.
Something better than the iMac, but less than the, you know, crazy big ones.
Yeah.
But, so they're the new white ones. They have 80, 120 gig models. A new black one at 160 gig. These are all 1 gig of RAM in the 2 to 2.16 gigahertz range.
Basically, this is just like a stats update, right?
Yeah. I mean, it was nothing amazing. They're just basically bumping up the stats of these MacBooks to keep up with the times.
Yeah. Probably a new board, and, you know, maybe some of the old problems will go away. New problems will show up.
Right. Oh, and thanks, Apple, for opening up a new Apple store in our area.
Yes. Right by us. We went there over the weekend.
It was flooded with people.
And so all the people I've converted to Macs now have a place to go.
Yes. Yeah. So that was pretty good.
Yeah. Okay, so one more story. Got another story. And this one, depending on who you are, you may find this boring, you may find this worthless, but to me it's pretty interesting. Basically, this is the 8-core Next Dimension PC What this is a fully functional desktop PC with 8 cores, you know, so like the brand new Mac Pros that are gigantic. Mm-hmm. This is that same power, you know, can have up to 24 gigs of RAM, up to 12 160 gig 2.5-inch hard drives. Basically, this thing's just like a little portable powerhouse. It looks like a little briefcase, has a small handle. It looks to be about, I couldn't get any measurements on it, but it looks to be about, you know, half the size of like a mini tower, maybe even a little smaller than that.
You're right.
Different form factor than like a shuttle PC because it's more vertical than anything. But I could imagine, you know, setting these up, you want a portable video editing system or a portable, you know, 3D modeling, mm-hmm. and you want to rent a render farm, stack up 5 or 6 of these next to each other, and you've got yourself a pretty powerful little render farm.
When you first told me about it, I didn't get it until I saw the picture of it. So mm-hmm. it is. It literally looks like a briefcase.
Yeah, yeah.
With, you know, ports on the back for your keyboard, mouse, mm-hmm. and that kind of stuff. So with that portability in mind, I do think it's pretty sweet.
Yeah. No, it is. It's 20 pounds. So it's heavy. But, you know, it's not designed to be a laptop. They aren't even trying to do the whole Dell Gigantor laptop. Yeah, look, this is a laptop. Wink, wink. This is the way to go, I think, for a portable desktop solution. It's pretty cool.
I could see field tests.
Oh, yeah. You know, yeah, like definitely. I could see some uses for this in field tests. Yeah, you already said that.
Speaking of going mobile, Avis, our not favorite rent a car company. Personally, my favorite rent a car company is Alamo because I'm from Texas, and they remember the Alamo.
My favorite rent a car company is the Friends and Neighbors policy.
Yes, the 5-finger discount. Do you bring your car keys? Yeah, here's my brick to break through the window. So Ava said that they are going to start renting cars that have an extra service in them, and it's going to cost you $10 a day to have broadband Wi-Fi mm-hmm. built into the car, and it's kind of like a cell phone type Wi-Fi thing. So business travelers, you want to go somewhere, you want your Wi-Fi in your car to look up addresses, send, receive email, do that kind of thing, check your Google Maps or whatever, you'll be able to do that. And I guess $10 a day, considering how much it costs to rent a car these days, is really not that much. Mm-hmm. It's definitely cheaper than the gas you're putting in it.
Right.
So, I don't know. Do you think it's worth it?
Well, I don't know if personally I would ever do it, but here's the nice thing to me about it. One, you know, to get a cell phone broadband card, you have to get a contract, you know, for 2 years.
Right.
Man, do you really want to do that if you're only traveling every, you know, 3 times a year to somewhere?
Right.
The downfall is you're locked. It's locked in the car. I mean, you can't take it into your hotel. You can't, you know, whatever. But it is Wi-Fi, so you could theoretically park somewhere, leave your car running, sit on a park bench, and use the Wi-Fi. Because it's using the cell phone service, but then it's broadcasting it via Wi-Fi, so any laptop with Wi-Fi would be able to get to it. But overall, $10, you know, it's a cool concept, but they're going to have to drop the price.
So it'd be cool on a long trip where you got like a bunch of cars, you rent one of these
right.
to be in the middle of the convoy, and then everybody could jump through that car.
Although the downfall there is that it's cell phone broadband, so it has to have access to that broadband network. So like remote highways is not going to work.
Right.
Seems like they should have gone with maybe a satellite service for this. Would have been a smarter option.
But that would have cost probably 3 times.
Yeah, it would cost a lot more. Bandwidth would be slow. People wouldn't like it. So, you know, it seems like a good idea. But in practice, for the price, I would maybe do it for a day or two. But I wouldn't want to do this for over a week. I mean, $50 for 1 week's worth of Wi-Fi service.
When you look at it that way.
Yeah. But 1 or 2 days, maybe. You know, it's not that much more than, say, an airport Wi-Fi access. So.
Right.
Either way. So the next thing is another seems like a good idea, but in practice is total failure. The Ready Boost for Vista.
Oh, yeah.
Doesn't boost.
Oh.
This is according to a story on Engadget. See, who was it that tested these?
So this is the thing with the thumb drives.
Yeah, so what this is, supposedly you would be able to take a flash drive. But it can't be any flash drive. It has to be a Ready Boost Ready flash drive because it has to be able to read and write faster than your average flash drive.
Okay.
So you're already spending more. And then you plug it in and it loads. This is like something for in between your hard drive and RAM. So it's something to bridge that gap between your really slow hard drive versus your super fast RAM. Seems like a good idea, you know. Loads up your mostly used programs, stay in the flash drive, ready to be grabbed by the RAM at any moment. But apparently, it's so minimal in the amount that it speeds you up that the money you spent on that flash drive, you might as well have just bought some more RAM, because you would get significantly faster and more increase from more RAM than you would from the money spent on a flash drive that is ReadyBoost capable.
Yeah, I don't know.
So, you know, whatever. I don't know. This is just like one of those things that Vista just seems like it's becoming more and more where it's all flash and no substance.
Well, it just feels like something they just threw in there at the last minute. Like,
yeah.
Oh, if you have a thumb drive, you can just plug it in and it'll even be more performance boost.
And I had an old one and I plugged it in mine and it was like, yep, nope, that's not going to work. That one's not fast enough. So I would have to go buy one and I'm not going to do that.
Yeah.
In the toolbox this week, we have a nice little app that will help you with converting difficult videos. That is not the primary, that's not the only function of this software, but it's how I discovered it. Little backstory, I was captured some video with my digital camcorder, my digital camera, so still cam video. Which usually is, you know, some weird MPEG format.
Right.
And the problem with it is that it is muxed video, which means the video file track also contains the audio. So when you bring it into, say, iMovie or Final Cut or Adobe Premiere, all you're going to have is a video track. There will be no audio. So when you try to convert it to some other format, which what I was trying to do was make a DVD out of this footage,
right?
I had no audio. And I tried everything I could think of, all the different tricks I knew. Nothing would help me out here.
Yeah, usually DVD software expects an MPEG-2 and a WAV file.
Right, so you have to be able to have a separate audio track.
Yeah.
And for some reason, I just couldn't get Final Cut or any other piece of software to separate that audio out. So I started looking around online, and I found this app called MPEG Stream Clip. You know, it does several things, but one of the things it does is it will convert between muxed or demuxed formats. So I was able to throw all my files in here in a batch, export them to H.264, demuxed, and then bring them into iMovie and go to town. So, you know, saved me a ton of time where I would have had to figure out some way to, like, loop it through and re-record the audio or bring in the tracks separately. I mean, there was other ways I could have done it, but this saved me a ton of time. If you're ever in a bind where you have that weird format and you can't get your audio, just download this. It's free. It's for Windows or Mac. So that's, you know, that makes it even better. We'll have a link in the show notes. And it does a lot of other things, but so it can be a little hard to figure out what you exactly need to do to get it to demux, but, you know, just go through the help files and you'll be able to get it. And it'll help you when you're in a bind. Man, I've been having a rough time at work.
What you got?
I've been having to set up this new lab, and it's been pain in the butt after pain in the butt after problem after, you know, unexpected delay. And I just, you know, I thought I could share a little bit about that and about the pain and suffering I've been enduring along with some of the fun I've had.
So this is you guys moving into the old building.
Yeah, so yeah, where we work, we don't really have new buildings. Right, so anytime we make a move, we're inheriting, usually a neglected room, something that, you know, funding was lost, so those people had to leave or they faded out, and, you know, the new project is going in, and so you have to gut the old lab and get it ready for new users. And, you know, man, the biggest problem I faced at first was, so we're moving some of the old furniture out, getting it ready for incoming things, and we pull out this old workbench, and there's about a 10 foot by 5 foot high swath of mold. Like nasty black, just gross looking mold. And it's right by the air handler system, so you know that that's just the air is getting sucked over that mold and it's blowing all over the room. And so that was, so that was just a big pain.
It was damp there.
Oh yeah. So the this room is an old server room that we're moving into. So it was back in the days when we had, you know, how you had mainframes that took up a 50 foot by 50 foot room.
Right.
So it's got these big blowers that, you know, take air inside the room, cool it or heat it, and then blow it back in the room. They're supposed to dehumidify. Well, they're old. They didn't function right. They don't make parts for them anymore. And it had failed and leaked some water and caused a bunch of mold. And
wow.
So that screwed up one side of the room. Man, the other thing I had is, you know, just the cleanup in these old rooms, because you're coming in and I think you're starting to experience this in one of your labs. You're coming into this room that, you know, used to be a hopping place, so there's, you know, wiring, but this is all 10-year-old stuff.
Yeah, or more.
Right. So, I mean, I'm seeing 10 base 2 stuff, you know, the old coax networking.
Thin net.
there's, like, discarded Coke cans under the floor because this is a raised floor.
Right.
I mean, I'm just, you know, I'm pulling out all this old wiring, pulling out the thin net, pulling out extension cables that go to nowhere.
Yeah.
You know, just, what a pain.
The old hubs, not switches.
Yes. Hubs. These old hubs. Yeah, 10 megabit. I even found the old punch down block for the phone system in the room.
Oh, yeah.
It was just left under the floor. So I pulled that out.
Yeah.
So, you know, as sysadmins, you know, we go from, you know, sometimes we do nothing but sit in a chair to, you know, pulling cables and running cables under the floor. And so you're getting, this floor is, I would say, a foot and a half, maybe 2 feet off the ground.
So
it's a higher raised floor than the standard raised floor I've seen.
Okay.
So like sometimes you just have to get down there and just get dirty.
Go
man.
For it.
There was one time, this was funny. This was really funny. So there's some old cubes in there, and some of the cube walls were blocking access to one of the power. So power's under the floor. So I'm trying to run power to my desk, and the closest power thing was like 6 feet away under the floor, and I couldn't pull the tile up because there was just a bunch of stuff piled on it. So I had to pull a couple tiles away, and I literally crawled under the floor completely.
Good grief.
To plug in a power cable.
I don't know if I would do that. Now, isn't there a story about an animal in that room?
Yeah, there's some history to this room. It apparently at one time they started hearing noise above the ceiling, and then like they started looking around, and I guess this raccoon just fell out of the ceiling
crashed through the ceiling
into the room while people were working.
Oh, crikey!
That's awesome.
So that was pretty wild. So you know, setting up a new lab, it's fun at times too, though. I mean, I'm getting to buy some new equipment, and
so now the mold, they ripped out the wall to fix that, right?
Right. Yeah. So that was like a 2 month delay.
Right.
You know, we were hoping to have people in there, and we just got delayed by 2 months because they had to rip out the entire wall.
Yeah.
Just to get rid of the mold, and
you're thinking getting new floors and new ceilings.
Yeah. So we're getting new floors, new ceilings. You know, it's. In the end, it's going to be worth all the effort, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, it's going to really feel like my lab, but...
Because you redid all the network from scratch.
Right, yeah. I went and ran all new Cat 6 gigabit switches. I'm getting my own special drop-in, so I'll have, you know, just a direct line right to me just for this room.
That'll be nice.
But, you know, we have all this new equipment, and yet still people coming in are just, like, totally ungrateful, don't realize how much work I put into it, and are just, you know, grumpy because the room isn't perfect like they hope it would be.
Well, they didn't see it before.
Right. That's the problem.
Yeah. It's just funny how, you know, no matter what, there's going to be people who it's not good enough for them, no matter what.
Yeah.
I mean, even if you give them a brand new machine with a big, super gigantic monitor, well, I want a second monitor. That's not good enough for me.
Well, it was like I tried to give a guy, he was griping, hey, I want a second monitor.
Yeah.
And he has a 19 flat.
Right.
Flat panel. So I bring him another 19-inch flat panel. Oh, I don't like that kind. So I was like, yeah. You know what, man? You're awesome, but I'm... Oh, man.
Yeah, I had somebody do that. I had somebody... They wanted a second monitor. I might even be the same guy. And he's like, yeah, I really like a second monitor. So I bring him one. He's like, oh, no, it has to match. It has to be the same kind.
All right.
Same brand. Really? All right, well, you just keep your single 19, and I'll see when I get to...
One is the loneliest number, man.
Yes. And then right next to him, I've got a guy with a 24-inch screen and a 19-inch. Because he didn't complain.
Yeah, that's a lot of real estate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So...
Now, granted, my stuff matches, but I'm the sysadmin.
Yeah, but, I mean, you know, that's acceptable.
Right. That's just users for you, man.
Yeah. The other thing that's a pain, I think, probably the biggest pain to me in setting up the new lab is getting rid of the old stuff, including the users.
Right.
Because, you know, they've been there for 10 years, and they don't want to leave. They don't want to go to a new area. Mm-hmm. And then the old equipment, like, you have to go through each item, line item by item, and just to decide, is this useful, is it not? And if it's not useful, then there's just a lot of hassle of paperwork and dealing with, you know, getting all that taken care of, so.
Yeah, usually it just seems like getting the old stuff out is twice as hard to put in than putting the new stuff in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, crawling under the floor, rolling up all that old nasty cable.
Yeah.
Getting it out. But it just, I mean, you want it gone.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't want the next person that comes in after you to go, golly, Joe left all that old crap in here.
Right. You yeah. know, so. But that's what you do. I mean, when you're leaving, you're not the you one cleaning up.
Abandoned
yeah,
ship.
You just leave it, you know.
I had an office. When I moved into my current office, there was like... So the room is like 10 by 20, the room that I'm in. There were like 8 switches in there. Because
and how many people?
Like 3. So every time the guy wanted to do something, he would just throw another switch down. He wouldn't relocate the old switch. He wouldn't, you know, rerun the cables. He would just like add to it.
Wow.
So I had so much spare equipment left over when I moved in and cleaned all that up.
Yeah, that's crazy. Man, it just seems like... I think it's just the nature of being in IT that you have to deal with old stuff.
Yeah.
Because you come in... I mean, it gets old so fast. I mean, 2 years, a two-year-old machine is almost useless now.
Yeah.
Especially in, you know, a research lab. So, you know, it's like everywhere I go, I'm coming in, you know, where I'm going has been neglected, so there's old equipment. And I mean, you just... Though, the funniest thing was this... These IBM ThinkPads that are in there that I'm getting rid of. These things have to be like 5 years old.
Yeah, stink pads.
They are, just by themselves, they're a good 4 inches thick.
Oh, yeah, they're giant.
And then there's a dock that's thicker than the laptop itself with like full speakers built into the dock because it's so big.
Wow. I've never even seen a ThinkPad dock.
It was choice.
That's awesome.
Like, that's something for the museum. Like, if we ever go to video, we need stuff like that in the background.
Yeah, yeah. Do we? Oh, yeah, we do.
Okay, maybe not. Well, we either need really old stuff or really new stuff, because anything in the middle is just boring.
Right.
Yeah. The other thing I think that's hard, you know, this goes back to unhappy users, is part of our job as sysadmins is just predicting what's needed.
Yeah.
Because we want to be ahead of the game. We don't want to be always scrambling for, you know, what they're asking. You know, so you try to predict what people need, and that's kind of the fun part to me of setting up a new lab is... So what, you know, what specs are people going to need on their machines, and mm-hmm. you know, what kind of conference room situation are we going to have here? You know, do we want to do a smart board? Do we want to do just a projector? Maybe just an LCD TV? You know, making those kind of decisions reminds me of what I got into this about mm-hmm. because I love just looking and researching new equipment, figuring out what's going to work best, and then when delivering it. And people like, oh, yeah, that's what we wanted. We didn't even know it.
Right.
That's just so satisfying to me.
Spending the budget.
Yeah. Well, and it's not just spending money. To me, it's delivering something to someone that they didn't know they need until they had it.
See, this is my broken fantasy, though, because I'm always thinking in my mind, I'm going to set this up for this user. And like, say I create an account for somebody.
Mm-hmm.
I log on with their username. and their temporary password. I rearrange their whole desktop. Mm-hmm. I get them all set up with all their shortcuts. You know, I fix all their permissions. Mm-hmm. I mean, I set up all their printers.
Right.
And I get all this stuff going for them that I don't really have to, I guess.
Right.
And it's just little things like that. And then you deliver it, and you're standing there like, you know, the bellhop who just delivered all your luggage. And he's got this big smile on his face, and you're just like, thanks. And you slam the door and don't even tip him, you know. And
yeah.
People just, they don't appreciate stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, they don't always know, you know, what went into it, especially when it comes to if you're taking something that's old and junky and making it just good enough.
Yeah.
Which is happens a lot.
Yeah, and that's not easy.
Yeah. And people just don't see it, you know. It's why being a sysadmin, you know, it's the underappreciated sysadmin, like we say.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you're behind the scenes, and so you got to take those chances when you can to show them big.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of challenges involved with it. It seems mm-hmm. like you've beaten everything so far.
Yeah, it's just getting... The other thing is I've been having to deal with other people. Yeah. And dealing with other departments is just...
The bureaucracy.
They're always slower than you even think they're going to be. Right. I mean, I would like... I estimate how long it's going to take to get our new drop-in. I give them, I'll add in a few weeks onto what I think it's going to take. I still don't have it. And we've got everybody in there. It's like we're running off a temporary network, and I'm going to have to change everybody's IP, set up all the printers again because they messed up when they ordered the fiber converter, so they couldn't get it in on time.
Yeah.
And they had to reorder it, and they didn't know it until it showed up. Right. So it's like...
That's what sucks about being part of something bigger. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're a sysadmin for a small business, which you have been there before,
mm-hmm.
You pretty much have total autonomy.
Right.
So, I mean, you are the go-to guy. There's no one else. No one else even knows or cares what you're talking about. So you pretty much get your way. The problem with the small business thing is, as you know, there's no money.
Right.
They can't even afford a mouse.
Yeah.
So then you go to the opposite end of the spectrum. Mm-hmm. You start out like deep, deep in the corporate like I did. And you're just like, wow, look at all this stuff. And look at this giant server room. And what's this Unix you guys keep talking about? You know what mm-hmm. I mean? So it's like being a total noob mm-hmm. in this giant corporation. And... pretty much you dive in, you start learning all about it, and they're spending money like crazy, and there's these giant systems, but you're just lost in this ocean of red tape, mm-hmm. and you can't even do anything without meetings
yeah.
and boardrooms and forms and permissions and signatures, and mm-hmm. oh my gosh.
Yeah, and the more I meet, you know, other sysadmins where we work, the more I realize how fortunate we are.
Yeah, we've got it good.
Because we have people that are willing to... you know, get us the funding that we need to do what they want us to do.
Yeah. Well, I always feel like I'm being paid to kind of cut through the red tape or go mm-hmm. around the red tape.
Right.
You know,
right.
and try to get them stuff. Like, hey, my mouse broke. Well, here you go. I got a stack of mice in my drawer, brand new.
Yeah.
You know, bam, it's right. done. You know, whereas if I wasn't there, they would have to email mm-hmm. somebody, wait a month.
Yeah.
You know. But, I mean, there's only so much we can do within yeah. our giant,
right.
you know, organizational structure. Pretty soon we hit the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And we're trying to yeah. bridge that gap, you know, between doing something right now and doing it eventually when the bureaucracy wants to get it done.
Right. And I think that's an important thing to do to keep being a sysadmin fun is, I mean, sure, you could work like crazy for 2 months straight, get all your scripts set up, get everything running perfect, and then all you got to do is sit back in your chair and do nothing.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, looking for those new projects or looking for ways to like wow your users to me is like the only way that keeps it fresh, to keep from becoming like totally jaded and totally an angry admin.
All right, folks, that's going to wrap up the show for this week. As always, feel free to visit our website at angryadmins.com. We'll have show notes to all the good stuff we talked about today. And until next week, I am Ryan Necessary.
And I'm Joe Bibby.
Stay angry! You knew he was going to do it.